Welcome to another episode of The Layman. I'm your host and layman, John Gabris. Today, I'll be talking to Dave Farina, who I know as Professor Dave, a science communicator and educator who is kind of doing the same thing I'm doing, but on YouTube. He's bringing science to the masses so that they can understand it. With me right now is Dave Farina, a.k.a. Professor Dave. Oh, it makes it sound like you're a hip-hop legend when I say, like a battle rapper. Put your hands together for Professor Dave!
That's right. Everyone needs an a.k.a.
I wish I had an a.k.a.
You can just
I want
make
an f.k.a., like a guy who, like, formerly known as.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, what would be the controversy then?
Yeah, exactly. I had to change my name because my editor left in a racial slur on an episode of Layman today.
Some sorted.
Spoiler alert. I'm awful. So, Dave, you want to talk a little bit about how you got into science? It's really funny. Like, a lot of people in the creative world majored in blank and did this and did that or whatever. But a lot of people are just like, oh, I fell into it. With science, you can't really be like, yeah, I was a theater major and then I became a scientist at 25. Like, you have to study to be a scientist. So I'm always very curious about making that choice early.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I guess I should make the clarification. I don't consider myself a scientist. I don't actively do science.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But being a science communicator and having studied science, I mean, I guess that started, well, you know, technically when I was a kid getting into astronomy and all that stuff. But then I did, I majored in chemistry. So chemistry is my background.
Yeah, that's, in my book, that makes you a scientist. The lady who sells me weed at my dispensary, I consider a scientist. She knows 8 things more than I do about
this. There you go.
A science communicator. I like that expression. I'm pretty good at that latter half of that phrase.
The communicating.
Yeah. And actually, as you can hear now, maybe not that good either.
Well, you sprinkle a little science in there.
Yeah,
there
you go. That's all you need. Mitochondria, ribosome, Golgi bodies.
Those are words. Those are real. those are science terms.
For some reason, I cannot remember anything from my entire life except for the parts of a cell. They just stuck in my head.
Did you by any chance in middle school build a cake?
No.
About the cell. I thought all schools did this.
Maybe we did.
To do this. You have to make a cake and you have little candies that look like all the different, like you get a Twizzler or something. And
I
feel like that might be a project that cements these terms.
Yeah. Minds. I mean, if looking at me now, you'd be surprised to find out I forgot about a cake at some point. I'm like, I remember some of the great cakes I had, like some weird old fat Lothario. So you studied chemistry in college?
Yeah. Yeah. I did a BA in chemistry at Carleton College in Minnesota.
Awesome. And what made you choose chemistry?
I knew that, I mean, I've always been into science. I think when I started there, we didn't have to declare till end of sophomore year. It's a little bit different, liberal arts school. And I think I wanted to do either chemistry, physics, or math, or music. I'm also a musician.
this fucking guy, but, this guy does it all.
But physics is really, really hard. Math is even harder, which I found out going through some of the first, you know, courses that I did in the first few semesters there.
Because there's always overlap with those. Like you have to take some math classes for physics.
Exactly.
Blah, blah, blah.
So for chemistry, you have to take a certain amount of physics and math. For physics, you have to take even more math. So I started out doing like my like calculus and then I did linear algebra and then I did ordinary differential equations. And on the second class, I was like, this is the feeling that I had never felt before of not getting it in math class, where in high school people would have that. And I go, what are you this is so easy. You just do this.
And it turns out you were just like 2 levels ahead.
I was just a little bit ahead, but
you're like, now I get it.
And once I got that feeling, I was like, I also do not like how this feels and I will not
guys,
follow this.
I want to go back to the lacrosse players in my high school and say, you're right. Math is hard.
I'm sorry. There is hard math.
I should have let you copy.
Yeah. So chemistry, I mean, I guess it just came a little bit more easily to me. And I just kind of went with that.
I'm curious if the listeners have a collective eye roll of like, well, chemistry was the easiest choice. Like, that's insane. As someone who majored in communications with a TV, film, and radio focus, by the way, saying that radio is in the title of my major shows you how old I am.
Well, there's probably a little bit of engineering going on in there.
Yeah. It's a lot of like...
Every subject is hard in its own way.
Right. Thank you. With chemistry, what were you thinking you were going to maybe do at this point?
Nothing. I was at 18. I started a band and it was bands. It was all bands. So from age 18, I knew I was going to be a musician.
So while you're in a band, you're like, I'm going to do music, but I might as well have a chemistry major if I'm going to roll.
Yeah,
to appease some parents or something like that.
Even then, definitely was genuinely interested in the subject and wanted to know it intimately. So yeah, that's what I went with. And my God, that's the best decision of my life, because since graduating college till now, the only way I've been able to substantiate myself financially is, you know, using that degree.
You're saying music is not as financially viable as it seems?
I have not earned a dime.
As someone who was late to this meeting, going to some bullshit audition because I thought.
And so out of college, I figured, well, I want to move to California, but I'm too much of a chicken to just move. I need a reason to move. So I decided to go to grad school. So when you are
very expensive reason to move.
No, but it's not. See, that's the thing. In the physical sciences, it was actually a job. In chemistry, above a certain level of institution, I went to UC Santa Cruz, and you get paid. So I got paid like $1,400 a month to TA two sections of a chemistry course.
Wow, that's so awesome.
It was a job.
Your master's.
Yeah. And so that was like, all right, that's like rent in a little bit, and I'll be in California, and I'll have a reason to go. And so I was there, but as soon as I got there, I joined this band in Santa Cruz that was like a really, you know, if that means anything, a big Santa Cruz band. And so I quit and we moved to San Francisco, you know, playing in bands there for 3 years, and all the while I need to make money. So I'm substitute teaching science classes. I'm tutoring high school students, then moved to LA, kind of doing the same.
It's almost like a trade. It's almost like, that's something like, I have no skills outside of like this, and I arguably, but it's like one of those things where it's like, if you know how to do construction, you can work forever. If you,
absolutely.
If you can teach, or if you know any subject very well, if you speak a foreign language, you could always work doing that.
Which is why I'm so thankful that I did get the chemistry degree, because I would have been completely screwed without it.
You would have been one of 10 million music instructors living in LA.
Unemployed music.
Exactly.
And as I was doing that, I was getting better at that. So I eventually got a position at this like trade university, teaching organic chemistry, lecture and lab. So I did that for like 3.5 years. It was paying pretty decently. And then,
so like a college professor, more or less, but not a full blown university.
It's like it's a notch below community college. Like, you know, these were post-bac students trying to get, credits to apply to pre-med programs and things like that.
Stuff that they need to fill out there.
They wanted to get into a nursing program, but they didn't take organic chemistry in their bachelor's.
So I actually know about this because my brother just did all this. My brother just got his RN, but he had to go to a school and take like 2 semesters.
It's very popular because a lot of people are trying to go in the medical profession because it actually pays really well, but you know, they need to do all this stuff. So I got a job teaching organic chemistry at one. Did that for a long time, actually, a number of years, and was really, really proud of my course. But then there was a series of bureaucratic events and I was fired from that.
Lemony Snicket's series of bureaucratic events. I remember that book.
And I had all these lectures and I was like, well, I don't want to waste them. And I don't see myself getting a similar position anywhere else. So I don't want these lectures to evaporate.
Because you designed the
curriculum. I wrote my course from scratch, you know, and made all these materials and stuff. And was like, well, I'll deliver these lectures to camera and put them online, you know, as though it was class. Like,
so we're hearing the origin story of Professor Dave.
That's exactly what's going on.
I'm no longer a mild-mannered science teacher / drummer. Yes. I am becoming Professor Dave.
No adamantium or anything, but it's...
hey, not yet.
It's
dude.
A start.
You're a chemist. You're not a chemist. You know chemistry.
Yeah.
To me, it's like if you can play the drums, you're like, I'm just so unskilled that any little bit of aptitude to me is like, this guy's a fucking... legend. People are like, relax.
He's a beast.
He's a street drummer. He's playing a bucket. He's the best I've ever seen. Imagine trying to keep rhythm. People are like,
It's not. Certainly, there are a lot of chemists who know plenty more than I do at chemistry. But in terms of explaining basic organic chemistry concepts, which is like a sophomore undergrad course, I got really good at that. And I was really good at explaining these things. And so I put them online. And it was received pretty well, so I thought, well, now I'll do general chemistry, but I'll do, you know, green screen and animations and stuff, and that did well too. So the rest is history. Now I'm working my way through every science course that there is.
It sounds like what you're doing is a better version of what I'm trying to do with this podcast. It's like I'm explaining science to people visually rather than behind a paywall on how.
But it's so there's two approaches though. There's the approach that's sort of a grab bag, entertainment based, get people interested in scientific topics. My stuff is more, I want the general public to listen to it desperately. I really want them to, but the audience
is for students.
Because the topics and the pacing of the lectures, they will very well complement the lectures that students have. And so, hey, I didn't understand my teacher when he or she explained this thing. Let me watch this clip and then, oh, now I get it.
Right. So. That makes sense because it's like one of the, on YouTube is like sort of the new Google in a way too, mm-hmm. right? Where you just go on YouTube, you're like, how to roll a joint. You know, that's actually something I did recently. I'm 35, don't know how to roll a joint. So that would make sense if you're a college student and you're like, I do not understand nonpolar covalent bonds. And you just, I'm sure there's a, it's a little higher than that. Type that shit into YouTube and then it's like, oh, who's this Professor Dave Cat? Is that, do you find like you get a lot of, I mean, I don't know how you would know that.
Well, that's exclusively what happens because I don't promote in any way, shape, or form. So you just have all these students all over the world that are desperately trying to learn this material, whether they're in high school or they're in undergrad, and they scour through these channels and these clips.
And once they discover it once, they're like, now when I'm in physics, I can
See something they like. And the word has gotten out a little bit with the chemistry stuff, so it's starting to do well in terms of views and subscriptions, but now I've done biochemistry. Now I'm putting out physics, and I'll do biology, astronomy, psychology, as well as non-science topics. I'm working on American history right now. So
cool. Are you learning a lot? I mean, it sounds like you have to do a lot of research yourself.
I'm learning a ton.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Okay. Is there a part of you that wants to learn? Like, there's something every scientist I've interviewed so far, every science person I've interviewed so far on The Layman has had some degree, some extras outside of their career, outside of their major, mm-hmm. some desire to learn more or like to question things. And I have that too. I'm just going about it in a forcing people to sit down and talk to me for an hour.
No, I have an extreme lust for knowledge. Absolutely. Yeah. And my goal had always been to become a very good generalist. But mm-hmm. now that the channel, that the path is sort of unfolding before me, I realized that my goal is to become the greatest generalist that there is. I mean, if you know, as absurd a notion as that may be, because the thing is that as I move through these topics that I do have working, you know, I did know a good amount of biochemistry for my chemistry major. I knew a good amount of physics for my chemistry major. However, I have to go back and review these things and learn some of the more adjacent topics that we didn't cover. And as I go further into psychology and biology, I will certainly be entering areas where I had very little working knowledge of prior, and then going on into non-science topics where I know literally nothing. I mean, I really did not know much about American history, but as the channel becomes more successful, I'm going to be able to hire people to write for the channel.
Right. And also as a student of science, you have the ability to read and retain and
I have an enhanced ability to process all the stuff, even if it's stuff that I didn't know yet.
Because you have a scientific method or approach to it.
And I have a wide enough knowledge base from physics to biochemistry that adjacent fields are, I can digest them easily. So biology, I don't know much about, but when I read about it,
you're like, oh, that makes sense because I know about this adjacent thing.
Yeah, I can compartmentalize it pretty easily because I understand the things that biological concepts break down to.
Right.
So I didn't know it, but I can, you know, pretty quickly put it where it belongs.
Oh, that's cool. And do you find, because I found this, the only parallel I have here is like I went from learning improv and performing improv to teaching improv for a while. And I found that like when you're teaching, you're finding ways to simplify it for someone else to understand. And then you start processing it in a different way. And you're like, oh, I wish someone would have told it to me like this. Do you find as you're teaching, you're like, oh, I'm actually learning because I'm trying to find the easiest way to explain it. And then as you're doing that, you're like, oh shit, I'm learning. Yeah. This is the easiest way to learn this.
I mean, in the 3.5 years I was teaching that organic chemistry course, I went from someone who got a B in all of his undergrad classes and had a, you know, a grasp of the material to an expert of basic organic chemistry, just because you have to explain this stuff to people.
Yeah, and every time you get a question you don't know the answer to or something like that, you're like, oh, let me figure that out. And then that's you lock that in.
And then next time you know the answer. Right, and it got to the point where I knew what people would ask.
Like you knew the follow-up question.
I knew exactly. And I just got really good at explaining those concepts.
By the way, on behalf of chemistry students and bio majors and science students across the globe, we thank you.
Yeah, I get their comments. It warms my heart.
Yeah, I mean, I fucking wish that existed when I was 16 and I was taking AP Bio. I would love nothing more than to supplement Ms. Holling's wonderful teaching with something a little easier or something I could do from home. But then again, there wasn't really the internet when I was in high school. So moving on, I'm young, I'm hip, I'm cool. So, Dave, something we mentioned when we were emailing was with all the talks of GMOs and synthetic versus natural and, you know, sort of like a push away from science in the zeitgeist, if you will. And science now has a negative connotation in some way.
It's very strange because you go back a few decades, 50s and 60s, science was glittery and sparkly and wonderful. It was like Tomorrowland at Disneyland.
Yeah. You know?
And we've moved away from that a little bit. Chemophobia is a big problem.
What's that?
Chemophobia is just fear of chemicals and chemically sounding things.
Ah, yeah.
But this always stems from ignorance because, I mean, just take the word chemical in and of itself. Everything is chemicals. So water.
Salt is a chemical.
Water is a chemical. It's all chemicals. So to say, you know, it's very common to hear somebody say, oh, there's so many chemicals in that. It's like, yeah, there's so many chemicals in literally everything on Earth. It's all chemicals.
Yeah.
So it's just a misunderstanding of words like chemical and synthetic and natural. And the problem is that we are taking a justified paranoia in big industry, and I won't completely defend big pharma because obviously any large industry does questionable things.
Yeah, if you're looking at anything that's profit driven, you're going to see some.
You're going to see some questionable ethics.
Yeah.
Although we definitely target them a little more than is logical.
Right.
But we are seeing that paranoia being misplaced onto science, and so you can question pharma, but you can't turn your back on what the scientific community says about what a disease is and how to cure it.
Right.
So what kind of drug is going to cure this disease? That is a domain of science, and you need to listen to this.
Yes.
Now, once the drug has been formed, you know, is it overprescribed? How much does it cost? What's going on along, you know, collusion with insurance agencies? Okay, that's all. Let's talk about all that.
By the way, not science's fault.
Right, exactly.
that's not a scientist who's designing
that's economics,
the
right?
price.
That's sociology. Yeah. These are other fields entirely.
Yeah.
But chemophobia is a big problem. Absolutely.
I mean, people are like, I don't want food with any GMOs. It's like, well, we were doing it for years to our agriculture, right? Like sometimes it's good. Like, yes, we can end up fucking that up, but there is a reason. Like we want to make drought resistant crops and stuff. God knows what the future holds for us. We might as well.
Sure. The concept of genetic modification is a good idea. That's a very basic statement that can be made. Now, I'm going to hesitate. I will refrain from trying to comment on specifics because I truly don't know them.
Right.
But that something that fundamental is a statement I can make confidently.
Right. God, I love talking to science-minded people because they like I love someone who's like, look, this is as comfortable as I am. Like this is as far down. It makes you feel more. I mean, you are being more honest. You're not just shooting from the hip about what you know. And every science person I talk to is like that. It's like, well, I wouldn't want to speak on behalf of the organic chemistry people because that is something. And I'm like,
The goal is to educate, and misinformation goes contrary to that. So, you know, I'm not an expert on all things GMOs, but the thing is that I am very knowledgeable about molecules and what molecules do and what they are. And this general fear of the process of genetic modification or drug synthesis stems from a confusion about what molecules are, how they are built, and how they behave, and in general, what disease is. And so this is something that we need to inform people about and sort of remove a little bit of that chemophobia.
GMO corn on a molecular level is corn, right?
Like, of course.
Yeah, exactly. So it's it's no different than normal corn.
It's there's been a modification to the genome, whatever right. that modification may be.
Yeah.
And people don't, there's a problem in the public's understanding of what DNA is, how it is mutated through natural processes, and what that means for industry. And so what a scientist views as a manipulation on the molecular level, it changing a couple of base pairs in a gene, the public sees as a scientist in a white coat pouring green ooze all
onto
over
corn. It's like, rise, my children, exactly. And like corn stalks storm out. And
so who do we have to blame? I mean, the creators of the Ninja Turtles and things like that. And I love the Ninja Turtles, so I don't want to throw any shade their
this
way,
is your fault, bro.
He's specifically the coolest one.
Yeah. Of course, as a young science fan, you Donatello's going to be your favorite. Yeah.
Even at age 7, I was Donatello. So that should be a foreshadowing.
And not to shatter stereotypes, but I was a big Michelangelo fan. Wasn't much of a leader, yeah. More of a party dude, if you will. even at 7, I guess. right, because would technically, like, say, when you talk about like GMO in, if you forced, so you're a cattle farmer, but you start choosing the pairs of what cows are fucking to make what, you know, mm-hmm. or you're using artificial insemination. Is that technically genetic modification if you're choosing this certain bull and this certain cow to pair up because yep. they both express the qualities you want in a milk-producing cow or beef cattle or whatever? That's technically genetic because you're not letting yep. it just randomly
and
happen.
If it doesn't qualify as that, it's truly only one step removed.
Right.
I mean, we can invent broccoli by hybridizing cauliflower and Italian rabe. Boom. Yeah. We made up a plant. It's broccoli. But all of a sudden, if we're using tools to manipulate on the microscopic level, then this is where the line crosses. But the problem is that people are confused not only about this process, but also how it relates then to pesticides, because most people are freaking out about
right.
pesticides and, again, chemicals, in quotes, that are all over the food that we eat. But this is also related to chemophobia and a confusion about what molecules do. Why would a molecule or a chemical, because they're synonymous, what would one do to you if you ingest it, and why would it do that? So to answer that question, you must know about biochemistry. You must know about enzymes and the active site of the enzyme and gene expression and inhibition. If you do not discuss this topic using those words, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So when we worry about, okay, so we got the, you know, modified plant, and then we're using this pesticide, but if you have it, then all these issues, there's a very uneducated discussion going on in that realm that leads people to all of these other avenues that are themselves profit-driven. So alternative medicine is profit-driven. The organic craze is profit-driven.
Yeah, I was just about to say before when we were saying who to blame for GMOs, you can almost blame Whole Foods because it's like, they're like, come to us, we're making billions over here.
Yeah. And I mean, it's fine because, I mean, I don't blame Whole Foods. They make the food there is better. It's
right.
It's just a better quality because when you have a smaller farm, you're paying more attention to the crops. Right? So it's just an argument against
big
factory farming.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, but we're talking about quality and maybe safety is a part of that.
Right.
But it's a completely different discussion from these really fundamentally scientific questions.
Right. Like, I think people have a hold over their head of pesticides when they think pesticides are being sprayed on their crops.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're thinking like Agent Orange and DDT and shit.
Very concentrated amounts.
Yeah, exactly. And, that's interesting. That's like a lot of the stuff that we're putting on the pesticides or whatever is in such a small, like it's sprayed from all the way up in the air. Chemtime. Yeah. Now I'm getting into chemtrails.
If people are trying to discuss toxicity without referencing dosage, then they truly don't understand what toxicity is, right? You can overdose on water.
Right.
You can die if you drink too much water. So,
you can literally drown from drinking water, which is crazy.
And nobody thinks that water is bad. So it's really just a confusion of a lot of these terms.
Right. It's funny, like, would you like to be microdosing pesticides or microdosing bug shit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, bug fecal matter. It's all like...
So, but I mean, I guess it's this idea that, I mean, it all comes down to a misconception I try to fight very strongly is natural good, synthetic bad.
Right. Right.
So
okay, let's get into this.
This is a strong misconception. There's two tiers to it. Number one is that if it's natural, it's been around for a long time, so it's got to be good for you. That's absolutely false.
Yeah, poison ivy is natural.
Yeah, or furthermore, the most potent toxins that you can find in frogs and snakes, these are the most toxic things in the world. Nature figured out how to make biochemical weapons. These are bad things. And then synthetic, right, is bad because it didn't exist before. It's unnatural, right? But molecules are just some atoms put together. Nature figured out certain ones and not others because it can't make all the infinite possibilities of molecules.
Right.
And so beyond that, there's a general distrust of the process by which we build molecules. So synthetic chemists build molecules. There's a firm disbelief in the public that if nature makes a molecule, like vitamin C or something like that, and then if a scientist makes that same molecule, that those are somehow different. This is absolutely fundamentally incorrect.
Because it wouldn't be called vitamin C if exactly. It wasn't exactly.
A molecule is just some atoms put together in a particular three-dimensional shape. These atoms bonded this way. If these atoms are bonded together this way, it's that molecule. There's no two ways about it. And you'd be surprised what percentage of the masses really, truly cannot accept this.
Right. And it's just because man made it as opposed
that
to God.
It's different.
Oh, wait a minute. Who, what's slipping in here a little bit that is going to be, that is problematic and arguably on a large scale, anti-science.
Yeah. And the general public doesn't quite realize that if that were not the case, chemistry would not exist. The entire field of chemistry would be invalid if this statement were not true, that this molecule is the same as this other one. It's
I think people conflate synthetic with processed foods or, you know what I mean? Or like fake turkey, you know, like, and it's like, it's not, you can't make a molecule. I mean, I guess you could make a turkey molecule at some point, like maybe down the line. But that's organic matter.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point that there are these false analogies, like, some imitation food or something like that, or a processed food, or like a synthetic fabric that imitates a natural fabric is inferior. This is a false analogy that people then take to mean that a synthetic molecule must therefore be an imitation of its natural counterpart, which again, on that fundamental level, is 100% incorrect.
Yeah, how many of these anti-synthetic people are probably popping a multivitamin every day?
The thing is they're going to the store and getting the super duper expensive bottle that has all of these buzzwords on it.
Right.
And that makes them feel good.
But it's not like there's naturally occurring pellets that have 100% of the RDA of all.
It's
not like, oh, don't worry, we sent a group of day laborers into a field and they scooped up all these vitamins.
And they've
for
been
us.
Synthesized anyway. So there's really marginal difference, and the ways that, in which they differ are irrelevant.
Right.
That's the brilliance of this organic movement and alternative movement, is that it is just as ruthlessly profit driven as Big Pharma, but they sort of do that classic technique of like, you guys are profit driven. We just want to make everyone healthy. It's like, no, you are nothing but profit driven.
Right.
It's demonstrably true because this product offers no benefits that this other one does not.
Right. And there's room for both.
Yeah.
Like people can make their own choices. I guess that is capitalism at its finest there, but the demonizing of it is what's insane. And then on a grander scale, like, I can't believe this move away from science. Like you said, like in the 50s, scientist was like a job that people like looked up to, or like NASA was like this. And now it's like, that's a waste of money. We need more guns and weapons and, or this or that. And it's like, what is this grand? It feels like we're at the beginning of where like journalists and scientists have to like dig their heels in and be like, no, we're not going anywhere.
Hence the birth of the science communicator as one of the most important jobs of the 21st century.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be biased, but...
I might be a little biased too. I would be comfortable saying I'm a science... Maybe I'm a communicator first, science second.
You qualify as a science communicator.
Yeah, it is the most important job. There's like two firefighters this podcast
off. Let's say unimportant job.
right.
In the 21st century.
I love it.
Because the problem is that if people are unable to make informed decisions about scientific issues, then by extension, they can't make informed political decisions. And this is how people come to power, by misleading the masses in these ways.
Yeah. So it's funny how we put so much weight on like forensic science. Like we found his DNA at the crime scene. He's guilty. But then it's like, also the same community of people who say this jizz is the murderer's jizz, who also say, guys, it's getting warmer as a whole on this planet. People are like, you guys are fucking loons. But let me go watch CSI for another 6 hours. Like, it's such like a selective memory or selective acceptance that people just kind of,
there's a lot of hypocrisy in that regard.
Is there any advice, or maybe if we can do one good thing with this podcast, maybe we could push younger people who are listening to this or comedy nerds who have this subscription, maybe to push to think about science more, to think in a scientific way, to approach things a scientific way, or maybe study sciences or make sure it's a part of their kids' education.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's just about generating quality content that inspires people to, or engages people. I mean, we are seeing a lot of science themed content lately, which is great. I think we have to be very careful to make the distinction between science themed entertainment that is very pandery.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, look over here, explosions. Oh, science kind of, and stuff that is a more dialogue based or concept based. And that can come in a lot of forms. There's absolutely nothing wrong with science themed entertainment. If it holds scientific principles as a core value.
Are we talking Cosmos and Bill Nye and Mr. Wizard at this point?
Cosmos is sort of in the middle. Yeah. Cosmos is definitely science-themed entertainment, but it does teach scientific principles. Yeah. Whereas something like this is science-themed entertainment, and I'm not giving a lecture on molecules.
Right. I hope people aren't listening to 6 episodes of Layman and being like, I think I get science.
I didn't pass my test yet.
I would also recommend if you are listening to this for science, edit out my voice of every episode.
But the good thing about this approach is that the two of us, are very passionate about what we're talking about. And one of us may say one thing about blah, 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 natural synthetic something. And somebody goes, well, they really feel strongly about that. And that's, I want to know more about that. And I'm going to go learn about that because I need to know what they're talking about. So
that's where the science-based entertainment comes into play, where it's like, it's just inspired. Like
it's a spark. You want people to have the same desire to learn about the world and about their surroundings.
When you were a kid and you saw like Don Mattingly, I'm from New York, obviously, hit a home run and you're like, I want to play baseball.
Sure.
Like that's like every kid, you know, that's like a stereotype of 1950s Americana or whatever. You're like, Mickey Mantle hit a home run. I want to be Mickey Mantle when I grow up. It's like, hopefully maybe somebody wants to be Neil deGrasse Tyson when they grow up.
And he's done a lot in that regard.
He's almost getting a little too, I'm the science guy. Like he's a little bit too, I'm smarter than the rest of the world.
Yeah, we seem to have given him that title unanimously. I'm coming for him.
Look out, Professor Dave is at your back.
But so that's the other tier, is once somebody has that spark and they want to learn science, where do you go to actually rigorously learn the basic concepts? And so that's what I'm trying to provide is, let's say you want to learn what somebody learns in a year of high school chemistry, but you want to learn it in 3 hours. And you want to take away a lot of the fluff that's just for the tests and the thing, you know, and just how can you come away with a generally enhanced worldview and a basic working knowledge of what molecules are? All right, well, watch these. There's 40 of them. Watch one a day. In a month and a bit, you know more stuff. And
that's never a bad thing. It's never a bad thing to know more things.
Exactly.
I realized as you were saying that we both feel the same way about both science and entertainment. I'm coming at it from an entertainment point of view with a science, with a science passion, and you're coming at it with a science point of view with a passion for entertainment.
Bridge the gap.
Yeah, there we go.
Both finally are sorely needed.
You got chocolate in my peanut butter. Oh, yeah. I got peanut butter in your chocolate. By the way, that's a chemical.
It's all chemicals.
It's all chemicals.
But the evidence of that what you just said is that almost my entire audience is students. So if they weren't in that class, they wouldn't be watching it. Whereas students wouldn't necessarily tune into, well, they might anyway, but I mean, it's just two different approaches. So, Hopefully both of those can be effective separately and in tandem.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get science students and people or people who are just passionate about science to learn more via you, or we get people who want to become science students via watching Professor Dave or listening to the Layman or whatever. I also just noticed you have a science tattoo.
Oh yeah.
Does that say Parsec?
Parsec. Yes.
This explains the Kessel Run is what you're telling me.
Well, actually, the Star Wars reference to the Parsec is at face value egregiously unscientific, as the Parsec is a unit of distance and not time.
Right, because it says it does the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs, exactly. Which would mean that you found a shorter...
Well, so that's the myself, being a big Star Wars fan, I sort of...
God, why didn't we start talking
reverse
about
engineered, I sort of reverse engineered a legitimate explanation of that. The Parsec being a unit of distance, if the warp drive is actually contracting space-time, if it is more especially powerful that it was able to contract space-time further, such that the Millennium Falcon literally travels less distance on the Kessel Run. So whatever. So you can salvage that. But at face value, no, they're using that word incorrectly.
I can't tell if you'd be really fun to watch sci-fi with or really awful to watch sci-fi with.
I mean...
Or is it in between?
It's sort of in between. I'm definitely hypersensitive to unrealistic...
Of course.
To bad science. But I still like a really cool movie. So, like, Gravity, awesome.
Yeah.
Interstellar, pretty cool. Enjoyed it, but definitely at moments like...
Do you want to know? I'm such a science fan and with such a minimal science knowledge that I went to go see Interstellar by myself in the in 70 millimeters in the dome.
Nice.
And I fucking ate an edible and then I was crying by the end of it. And then when I was in the Uber ride home, I was like, I chose the wrong profession. I should be trying to make the world better and save the world. And then I was like, I got to do more shit with science.
Okay, fine. But you don't have to be a scientist to do that.
Right.
I mean, if I believed that, then I would still be trying to do science. I dropped out of grad school several times. So, I mean, and I learned the hard way. I don't want to be a scientist. I don't like doing science.
Right.
I truly don't.
You enjoy science.
I enjoy science. I enjoy learning about science and I enjoy explaining it to other people.
I think that's let's take a second right there because this has come up a couple of times. A lot of people think that to study science means you eventually
become
either
scientist.
Teach or you're in a lab coat touching pipettes together in a Petri dish or whatever.
Yeah.
And people are like, I don't want to do either of those
things.
It's like, there's so much you can do with science. Like you can be, isn't Andy Weir, the guy who did The Martian? Like that's a scientist, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that. Well, how'd you feel about The Martian? That was a lot.
One I liked a lot as well. I mean, definitely two or three unforgivables, but those were largely actually in the field of economics. Like, sorry, homie, you're staying. They would not go back.
No, there's
not
no
in a
way.
Million years.
Yeah.
So that's not so much of a scientific inaccuracy, but I mean, in Interstellar, that time dilation was used as a plot point. I mean, that's a landmark in science entertainment. And,
right.
You know, I love the concept of Mars colonization, and I really
love
like
the
it.
Moment. We always come back to the moment, especially on this podcast, whenever the Martian comes up, the moment when he goes, looks like we're gonna have to science the shit out. I'm getting chills talking about it. That's how exciting. Look, you can see my forearm hairs are standing up. I truly loved when he's like, we're gonna have to, and I'm like, yes, of course, there's gotta be a way to fix this problem if we approach it scientifically. Mm-hmm.
But then, the part I didn't like was Donald Glover's character sort of playing that like disheveled scientist who's the only one who can figure it out.
Right.
And then all he does is talk about a gravity assist, which is like, dude, we know that.
Right.
We use that all the time.
That's such a great stereotype of like, there's like five stuffy guys in a white coat. And then there's like one dude, like younger dude who's like asleep and he wakes up and he's got like a bong and like music blasting.
He's Einstein.
He's like, I solved it.
See, I think that Einstein is responsible for this image of the disheveled scientist.
Yeah.
I
mean, and he's just a sloppy dude.
I mean, he just had funny hair, but it's like, it's the public's obsession with Einstein as a figure is, I think, stems from his hair and that picture with his tongue out.
Right.
And people are like, the best scientist gotta be like this guy.
Yeah. That's really funny, like completely misstereotyping scientists based on one picture.
I mean,
of
a lot of
guy.
Scientists are weirdos,
right.
But I mean, it's... Whatever.
There's a lot of cops are weirdos.
Yeah.
A lot of
there's a lot of super
weirdos.
Normal scientists too that right. You can just grab a beer with and talk about sports or whatever.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about this Professor Dave venture
sure.
For the listeners who are intrigued. So if you're not a high school, if you are a high school or college science student, check this shit out for sure. If you're not, check it out to gain knowledge, to gain interest. But tell me a little bit about what you're doing over there.
Yeah, so the goal is to provide educational content that is not this like, you know, pop sci, just we mention a few science words, but it's mostly just graphics, and it's not quite a rigid lecture just like, you know, showing every single little calculation. It's sort of in between. Students find it helpful to reinforce the fundamentals, because if you truly understand the fundamentals, then all the details above sort of work out. But it's also not so wrapped up in details that, you know, the common public wouldn't find value in it. My true goal is to just, okay, you want to know science? This is what you got to know.
And if this kicks off some sort of interest, go get yourself a textbook, go get yourself another book or another, take a class or a lecture series.
But I mean, truly, like if you absorbed everything in all of these tutorials, that's all you need. Like in terms of a basic working knowledge of a subject, of a discipline. Like if you watch the entire chemistry series, general chemistry series, you could probably do fairly well on like a high school chemistry final exam or the AP exam or something like that. And so you don't really need more than that if you're just trying to get the basics, and you probably, it won't all stick. I wouldn't expect it to, even if a third of it sticks, you just come away with a better worldview that is more rooted in reality and not on these, misconceptions that people tend to have.
Right. There's something about our society where we either stop learning at 17 or we choose to stop learning at 17 or choose to stop learning at 22. Yeah. But we can keep learning.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we should.
And we should. If someone were to come for the first time to check out Professor Dave, where would you recommend they start?
I think probably general chemistry. Chemistry is the central science because it's sort of in the middle in terms of scope. Physics is the very small. Then chemistry is molecules, and then biology is bigger. So if you start in the middle there,
you can go in.
Yeah. So if you were to watch general chemistry and then organic chemistry and then biochemistry and then flip it back and go back for physics, and you watch all of that, that's going to definitely change the way you look at things.
Oh, awesome. Well, Professor Dave, FKA Dave Farina, thank you for taking the time to talk to me and letting us come in your house. And I fucking love that you have a scientific explanation for parsecs. Like, I wish we could have hashed out. We could talk star. We could talk how come the light ends on a lightsaber.
That's a good one. Right? With such a profoundly rounded tip.
Right. Wouldn't it be infinite? Like, or at least until the light faded, right?
Tough to think about. Got a bone to pick with you, Lucas.
Thank you, Professor Dave. I just have one last comment. Where were you when I was taking science classes? I definitely could have used some YouTube videos to help me understand photosynthesis, etc., etc. Let's hope Dave and I can continue to use our powers for good and bring science education to the science uneducated. On the next episode of Layman, I'll be talking to Hosea Nelson at UCLA, who is a molecular chemist working on total molecular synthesis. Don't know what it means, but we'll find out. The Layman is a Stitcher original and a production of Midroll Media. My EPs are Chris Bannon and Jenny Radlett. My producer is the wonderful Rob Pera, and I am your layman, John Gabris.